Hello and welcome to Toy Power, the podcast where we talk toys and everything pop culture. I'm Trent and it's great to have your company today for episode 36. We've got a great show lined up for you today full of New York Comic Con goodness, all the latest toy and pop culture news, and a golden vintage toy line retrospective. With me today I have Ben.
G'day all.
Frank.
Hey hey.
And Aaron.
Hello everyone.
And to kick off, we'd just like to shout out a special thank you because we're all holding something very special in our hands.
Oh.
And that is thank you to Scott, Mr. Grayscale Warrior.
Yep. So special thanks to Scott, or as most people know him better by his Instagram name, Grayscale Warrior Toys, for assisting us with the exclusive mini comic from James Eadcock, the Masters of the Universe Return from Terror Island. A previously unpublished mini-comic. He picked up a copy of each of us here at Toy Power, as Scott was fortunate to attend PowerCon back in September. So big thanks, champ. Each of us here at Toy Power are extremely happy to each have a copy. So, yeah, massive ups. Big ups.
Yeah. And we were just flipping through it before. And, you know, I've read this one in the Dark Horse Guide, in black and white, and it just felt like a totally new comic to now have it published in full color. And some of the really cool things, like the sorceress is in there wearing sort of the pink outfit. And so some, obviously they've made those choices in terms of the artistic direction. So well done, James. It's absolutely superb.
And the back cover looks...
That was the first thing I looked at. And I was like, oh my God, it's the same. It's so good.
But obviously with the Snake Man in there and Evil in, so
Well, that's what makes it Prince better.
Adam, and Prince Adam on a mini, on the back of a mini comic, which never happened before. It's just a nice touch.
Beautiful. Hey, we're going to head now into our latest news segment, and we'll start off with New York Comic Con because that's been just about a week ago. So that was held in October from the 5th to the 8th. We'll start off with Star Wars. Star Wars is pretty topical at the moment. We've had the trailer drop, and we'll get to that in a moment. But the thing that grabbed me was the Star Wars Black Series reveals, and finally that Jabba's Palace Lando figure, which is one I had as a child in the vintage Kenner line. Got it when they did Power of the Force updates. So hugely excited to see that Lando's finally getting a figure. We also had Dengar for Lom, if I'm getting that one right. Benicio del Toro will play a character DJ in the upcoming Episode 8 Last Jedi, so we're getting his figure, and that was the first time I'd actually seen what Benicio is going to look like in that film. And we're also getting an Episode 8 Rey. So anyone have any thoughts on those figures?
Yeah, look, I'm blown away by that reveal at New York Comic Con. I thought the note this is the second Lando that's come out in the Black Series. We have the Bespin one, and I'm guessing we're looking at prototypes, but this likeness for Billy Dee Williams seems to be I thought the last one was good. This one just seems to look like it's walked right off the film. Really does look like him, and I thought they knocked that one out of the park. Dengar looked absolutely awesome, I thought. It's always good to see the bounty hunters. I've always had a thing ever since childhood about that scene, and I remember playing with the vintage line in junior primary school in the sandpit with kids and having a thing for those bounty hunters. Bossk, I think for me, because I was a bit younger, the Star Wars one was sort of wrapping up when I was sort of heavily into action figures. But those sort of characters reminded me a lot of Master Universe characters. They had that vibe. You know, Bossk could have, you know, been, you know, part Whiplash, part Merman kind of thing. You know, Dengar. You know, there's so much diversity in the bounty hunters. You've got droids, you've got monsters, you've got, you know, Dengar, who could be perhaps a bit more human looking, just dressed very differently. So much diversity that really spoke to me as a kid. So I'm really happy to see more of those bounty hunters from that key scene coming out. So I'm really happy.
That rounds out the bounty hunters, which I started collecting the Black Series back when they first came out. And I thought, yep, I'm just going to get the bad guys, the villains, and picked up you know, the bounty hunters and things that were out, the Bossk, Boba Fett, etc., etc. And then it was for a long, long time. It was episode 3, episode 5. You know, it was all the new episodes. It wasn't really the old original trilogy stuff. And so I gave up trying to collect them, and I forwarded my small collection on. And it's now to see the Dengar and Forlom, you know, finally hit the pre-order sort of thing. I feel bad for once that I, you know, let them go.
You're just going to have to collect them again, aren't you?
Got to catch them all. So
there'll be a 5-6 pack or something. Sure. Special edition, commemorative.
Who knows what they might do for a 40th anniversary Empire Strikes, a 40th anniversary Empire Strikes Back.
40, wow.
Well, we've got
feeling 40, old.
Yeah, I know. Well, we've got a 40th anniversary Star Wars A New Hope line this year. In 3 years' time, we could get an Empire Strikes Back one.
Yeah. Very good.
That could be a chance bit.
Yeah, back into it. The collecting bug bites again, or strikes back, as it may. Hey, Masters of the Universe Classic. So, Super 7 again had a presence at New York. Just to go through something that was confirmed. So, the Sorceress figure, this we're talking about Filmation Sorceress, now been confirmed that she's going to come with two versions of the wings. Mm. One will support that very iconic outstretched arms look, and the wing will essentially attach to the back, and you'll sort of be able to position her hands in front of those wings to give her that, I guess, very iconic look that you see in the opening title sequence. There'll also be a folded down version of the wings. So snap off that longer version, snap on the shorter version, and then you get that sort of fold down look. So it's not going to be like the Mattel Classics version, where it actually had the sort of articulated opening up movement. So that has been confirmed. Something that we haven't had confirmed, maybe Darren, you just talk us through in terms of alternate heads. So, and look, and this doesn't surprise me if this is accurate, because I know when we got to Manny Faces, it was a while until we saw those alternate faces actually be presented via images. But there is some pretty exciting news potentially sort of floating around.
So, as Trent alluded to, at New York Comic Con, there were a number of people on the floor that said they had spoken with people working on the line, Super 7 and others, and said that there were going to be two heads for both tongue lash, or one I guess with the tongue lashing out in attack, and one with it not, sort of to support the action feature that the character's so famous for. And the other one that I was talking about was the Sorceress, and that she would get the forgive me if I get this name wrong, the Carrick Ungle character from the Filmation Origin of the Sorceress episode, where who she's the predecessor of Teela Nutt, who's the sorceress that we all know, and she has a very pivotal story around giving Teela Nutt the capacity to defeat the early Horde invasion. So there's been fans have said on the floor that a second head would be accompanying, so that you could change your sorceress head to give you that character.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like they did with Hawk and Delora in the previous wave.
Yeah, it certainly doesn't surprise me that they're going down that path, because, you know, obviously these are still sculpted by the Four Horsemen, and the Four Horsemen always sculpt additional parts, accessories. So that would be a great addition to those particular figures, and I think at the $35 price point US,
you'd expect
I think, you know, where they make sense to throw in those extra heads, I think we're paying enough for them to get that. Hey, just to know as well, if you're looking to pre-order those two waves, so this is what I guess we call quarter three and quarter four figures, one set of four being the Filmation and one being the sort of classics, there that is live. So you can jump on the Super 7 website and place your pre-order for the eight figures. We talked a little bit in a previous podcast about, originally we felt they were going to do sort of four figures a quarter. It now looks like they're sort of doing eight figures every 6 months. That seems to have settled in as the regular
standard way
of releasing these figures. I know at the time we sort of had some hesitation around doing so much in sort of one hit. They have offered again the 3 monthly installment payment program, which I guess helps you spread that cost out over it. And I did note when I placed the order here in Australia, the shipping was very reasonable to get the figures over.
They did fix it.
Yeah, so it initially went live with the high price point. Yeah, I'm surprised they sort of went live again with the same error they knew they had. Like, hopefully they get it's that obviously some corrected. Sort of glitch, but
The pricing was very reasonable. I ordered mine and I was surprised just how low it was. It was lower than the set I ordered earlier in the year, which I guess reinforces what Brian Flynn indicated before, that, you know, once the postal shipping companies saw the volume of traffic around this particular line, then pricing would be adjusted accordingly in a bulk form. And I think that's terrific that they've passed that on to us customers as well. You know, I'm in two minds about the idea about 4.8. Obviously, if the goods and services taxes comes into effect next year, like we're hearing, and we're having to, in Australia, having to pay an extra customs fee on top of that GST, then we probably want them shipped together in as fewer packages as possible, because it's a flat rate. So I can see the logic for us in staying in that system, but I can also see, if, you know, for some people too, it, you know, 8 in 1 go makes it, you know, incredibly expensive to find that kind of money all in one hit. So you just know, even with the payment plan.
Yeah. So just to confirm, Darren, you did order?
Yes.
Trent?
Yep.
I've got 3 coming.
I have 0. That's cool. No, it's just an interesting, you know, we talked about the controversy with the 4 and 8 waves, just seeing that it, you know, good to see that hasn't prevented some of us from getting on board.
So I believe Trent and Darren have gone through the website. I have gone through a third party here in Australia, and a lad named Albertus Lee. I apologise pronounced his name wrong. And I've been able to cherry pick the 3 characters that I want. Do I want all 8? Hell yeah. Can I afford all 8? No. So I've cherry picked the 3 I want, and trying to slow down the collection, if that's even possible.
No. That's all good looking, and at least you're able to get the top 3.
I'm very happy with what I'm going to be getting.
Yeah. No, pretty cool. Keeping on the Masters theme for a bit, Sideshow's been doing a number of high-quality premium statues, and these are sort of the mixed media with the removable capes and real cloth capes, and you can... I think they've got sort of magnetic hands. You can switch in the power sword to the axe and that sort of thing. So these are a very nice reimagining of the He-Man characters. We got a new one. So, surprise, surprise, it was Orko, which is an odd choice for, I guess, this very hyper detailed, ultra realistic sort of sword and sorcery, almost that heavy metal sort of imagery that we're getting. So Orko, designed by Nate Barch, He-Man.org podcaster himself, and huge fan. So that's great to see that work staying within the fan community. What were our thoughts on seeing Orko?
Extremely 2000X looking. Yeah,
that's fair.
Not really my cup of tea, but you know, all the best to those that love it. So no disrespect to Nate Barch. I think he's a phenomenal artist, and I have the utmost respect for him. But it's just not my cup. It's just not something that I'm that. Maybe the character in general, I probably wouldn't go out of my way to grab. Over a, let's say, a trap jaw or something.
I thought he looked really cool, and same as Ben, 2000X was just the first. I was like, I had to sort of think back to what that figure actually looked like, and it's taken a lot of design cues from there. I don't mind it. I think it plays to the fact that Orko's an alien, you know, and aliens by the nature of, you know, how people look at, or humans look at other humans, they're supposed to look weird and different and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, I thought it was a very cool, gritty, you know, if they were to do this Masters movie, which may never happen, I could see him in the movie looking like that and wouldn't be upset by that.
Yeah, cool. Hey, and
it's a really good call.
Yeah, Frank. It's a good call. Yeah.
You know, that probably is how you'd probably expect in this era anyway, Orko might be presented in a film. And, you know, I was probably more surprised by the character choice. I'm a huge Orko fan, so I don't think I'm knocking him, but you know, I probably, in my own mind, was probably thinking maybe Teela or the Sorceress might have been next, just simply because, you know, they would make a lot of, or Hordak, because they would make a lot of sense based on what's come before.
Yeah. Especially with the She-Ra.
The She-Ra, alongside Hordak, or even Catra, if they wanted to pay tribute to the toy line.
Yeah,
and they could do an awesome catch.
They certainly could. Or obviously Teela and the Sorceress, because Teela would be the Evil-Inn equivalent. And the Sorceress is just, well, she's the Sorceress.
Yeah.
She's tied to everything. But, you know, having said that, you know, Orko is a very cool character. And I do like the design. It's grown on me each time I've looked at it. I can see definitely the 2002 influence. I hadn't thought about what Frank had thought, and I'm just reflecting on that in my own mind now, that probably is what a dark and gritty live-action Orko could realistically look like. Or something that takes some cues from that could look like.
Yep.
In the modern era, rather than the more vintage-style Orko that might have, you know, come from the Filmation.
Yeah, and I would have thought as well, characters like Beast Man, maybe even a sort of a merman type character, I think would look great in that sort of reimagined universe. A bit more Masters news. Megablocks is doing a line of, I guess, those sort of Lego sized mini figures. These are fairly well articulated by the sounds of it, and sort of more detailed than a Lego figure, really resembling the characters. Originally they came out with a He-Man and Skeletor, which are at retail as we speak. They showed some teasers of Beastman and Teela. Any thoughts on these, and are you going to try and pick up this little line of minifigures?
I think they're awesome. I think Megablocks is definitely taking a step in the right direction, because a few years ago they teased us with a Castle Grayskull and He-Man riding Battlecat, but that has not come to fruition, and the people have looked back on those photos from a few years ago, and it is actually a different style of He-Man to the version that we got packed. I haven't seen them in Australia yet. I'd love to get He-Man and Skeletor, but I'll call it at that. I'm not going to pursue any other characters. Not that there's anything wrong with the Teela and Beastman. It's just there's only so much I can collect. So if I can grab He-Man and Skeletor, I'll be very happy.
Yeah, I kind of think the opposite, to be honest. When it was, I think they look great, but I looked at it and just went, oh, it's just He-Man and Skeletor. And yes, they're the two title characters, so naturally you would do them. But if I'm going to go to the effort of either A, trying to hunt them down in Australian retail, which is pretty average at the best of times, and or trying to import them or whatever, then I was just like, well, where's the rest of them? You know, I feel like and at that scale, at that price point, it's not like you're spending, we're talking classics, you know, $35 and upwards. It's, you know, whatever the, no, I don't even know the price point, to be honest. About
$4 in the US.
Yeah, exactly. That sort of thing. I'm like, give me a whole shelf of them. Do the classics run, but at that scale, and I'm in. So, yeah.
Odd Troop is 100.
Yep.
Yeah, look, to answer Trent's questions, and sorry to cut you off from.
No, you're right.
Huge fan of them. I think it's just great to see Master Universe anything in retail. I haven't seen them here like Ben. I had hoped that maybe even a Zing or a Mad Zombie Collectibles in Adelaide, if people are familiar with them, might have had them. But and there's still time. There's nothing to say they won't. But yeah. If they don't, I'd be keen to import them. You know, I am keen. And I couldn't, like Frank, I couldn't see myself just stopping at He-Man and Skeletor. I guess, for me...
That's why Ben's we're on got the a show. Thing called
willpower.
Yeah, he has. And I don't. And for me, the sad reality is He-Man, Skeletor and Teela were my first three figures in the vintage line as a child. So for them to be offering Teela next, that's just too impossible for me to not repeat that. And Beastman wasn't far behind either. There was a bit of gap. I think I had Zodak and Battle Cat and Prince Adam before Beastman, but he certainly wasn't far behind. So for them to be offering that kind of character selection and for me to basically be able to repeat the order of the vintage line almost, certainly for the first three, I couldn't not do that.
Just on that, so if I could walk down to my local Kmart and there was a pegs full of all four characters, I probably would buy the all four. Yep. Without, if they were, you know, $5, $6, $7 price yep. point. But because I'm being realistic because the Turtle Mega Bloks line didn't do all that well, and the Turtle Mega Bloks, minifigures wound themselves up in reject stores and things, which is a cheap store, franchise, I'm not holding any expectations that they will make it to Australian shores. So I'm realistic that I will have to import them. And if I'm importing them, I've got to add on, third party
Costco
profit the shipping and everything. So that's probably why I'm more in the headspace of only He-Man and Skeletor, because I'm going to be paying three times retail for.
Yeah, that's
and
fair.
That makes a lot of sense.
That's where I'm at. So.
Yeah, fair.
Makes sense. Moving on to Eagle Moss. This is the company that is well known for their sort of subscription services and probably rose to fame with their $5,000 Millennium Falcon put it together over sort of 3 years. There you get to buy the door handle now this week. But look, some of their offerings are really, really quite good and really quite value for money. They've done the Batmobilia collection, which was about 70 or 80 different Batman vehicles. Even different things like, there was Robin vehicles and Catwoman vehicles and Joker vehicles and all those sorts of things. They usually release these things fortnightly, and they try to aim at around that $20 Australian price point or whatever it is, $15 in the US.
They suck you in. First cover price, that'll be $2. Yep. And then the next one will be $20. And then at the bottom of the screen for the added total collection cost will cost you $2,500.
Yeah. Just read the fine print. Yeah. I was scrolling for ages to see how much that Millennium Falcon was going to cost. I don't mind if I buy something discreet. I don't mind because I'm paying $20 and I'm getting that item. Yeah. And it's done and it's complete and I can move on. But if I'm buying a part of something, I want to know exactly what I need to spend to get the whole thing. And they were being very... I think they did a Falcon and they did a DeLorean. Yeah. And they were being very cheeky with how they were publishing that total cost. I had to scroll for... I think I had to Google it to try and find some complaints forum where they were talking about
that. Deliberately hit it on their site. Yeah.
The other problem I find is you've sort of got to have a repertoire with your newsagent to continue to get the... issues, after anything after 20, let's say. So if you don't have a good, position with your newsagent and you're going to buy them each and every week, they'll stop ordering it for
they
you.
They will, yeah. It peters out.
Yeah.
The way I did the Batmobilia collection and I did that direct with Eagle Moss so that every month two would appear at my door.
Yeah.
But you're right. Your newsagents, they seem to carry it for a bit and then interest wanes and they get less and less.
Yeah.
And you almost need a special order to get them. But anyway, the topic we're speaking about is very exciting.
Is Aliens. So the Aliens have picked up the license. Eagle Moss have picked up the Aliens license, which is pretty exciting. And the way they're sort of marketing it is they're teasing that they're going to do some of the old Kenner toy line. And, this...
Snake Alien.
Snake Alien, the Scorpion Alien, the Queen Facehugger, just to name a few. And that really excites me. But my concern is that I'd have for those, let's say a dozen toys, I'd have to buy 30 other characters, maybe movie or something, which isn't bad, but where do you draw the line? So, but good luck to them. I'd love to see it in the scale and things, and if they do release a few issues locally, I might be. Picking them up, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Watch this space.
Very cool. We've talked a little bit about, and Ben's, I know, has talked to this company, which is Hire, and they've been doing the smaller scale Predator figures and some of the Alien vehicles as well. We finally got some more concrete news on these.
Yeah, so we've been watching this new company, Hire Toys, and they've been... advertising their line of Predator toys, including some vehicles and things and from the aliens and stuff. And finally, they've now announced that their websites can order and got solid pre-order dates, and their release dates are now February 2018. Mm. So that's when they'll actually hit the shelves, and you know, the collectors will potentially have them in hand early next year. So exciting stuff.
Cool.
Yeah. Hasbro had some pretty exciting news. I think there was some screams going around, little high-girled pitch screams coming from myself as well, when this was announced. But it's Dinobots, but there's a twist.
Dinobots combined. As one of those, I believe there's been a number of third parties that have done it sort of over the journey, but this is the first Hasbro one where they've gone, do you know what? That's actually kind of cool. We're going to do one ourselves. And all these conspiracy theories are just going, oh, this is Hasbro undercutting some of the third party ones that are still, you know, two limbs from completion kind of thing. But looks very, very cool. They also showed off another combiner team from G1, the Terracons, looking very reminiscent of their old stuff. Amazing how you can take a really simplistic G1 toy and it looks updated and it's got the articulation, and they look really cool. They also had, as part of this Power of the Primes thing they're doing at the moment, a purple and black Rodimus. And along with, I know we've spoken about it before, where there's a leader class or a larger scale Rodimus figure that the deluxe size or the, you know, sort of normal 5-inch figure fits inside of. This larger Rodimus is Rodimus Unicronus, apparently.
Yep.
And he's got like full on like the, you know, evil universe dark goatee that, you know, you'd expect the evil Spock to be wearing and stuff. He looks phenomenal. It's amazing. Yeah, you take that sort of character that's known for its reds and oranges and do them in black and purple, and you're like, oh, I know it's a repaint, but I want it.
Yeah. It's a repaint with a goatee. I mean,
it's like in Futurama where Bender's, you know,
Evil Bender.
Yeah, had a goatee. You know he's evil because he's got a goatee.
Yeah, and they also showed off, which I think this had been sort of rumored or talked about for a while, but they're doing a Predacons combiner, and they showed off just the backpack, which is just the classic wings that he has. And just looking at the scale of that compared to the figures, there you go. Yeah, it's going to be huge. Yeah. Like, total prototype, not painted, just the wings, and everyone's just losing their minds. Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, that's what New York's about, losing your mind. people that may, speaking of losing things, sad news for Power Lords fans. The Four Horsemen had taken it upon themselves to try and breathe new life into this franchise, and Ben, maybe walk us through sort of what happened in this one.
Yeah, so Four Horsemen announced recently that they, unfortunately, the Power Lord toy line is not going forward. So they apparently only hit about 2/3 of the goal they needed, and thus all customers whom pre-ordered the Power Lords had them cancelled, and the holds on cards had been released. Yeah. So unfortunately, another revitalization toy line has bit the dust. So.
Yeah, and am I correct in saying these aren't sort of 6-inch scale? They're a slightly smaller scale.
Couldn't say, sorry.
I know the original Power Lords were sort of, in my mind, that sort of smaller scale. I'm not sure if people are just more into 6-inch. I don't know if the fact that the Mythic Legions have done so well that people have sort of spent all their money on that rather than Power Lords.
I think in today's society, with so much options out there, I mean, I'm drooling at the mouth about Predator King and things like that, and the Terracons have got my interest as well. There's only money only stretches so far for some collectors. Absolutely. And I can't imagine there's the mass Power Lords fans out there as opposed to Masters, Transformers, Ninja Turtles.
This hobby is not all that different to when we were children. It's always been about choices and priorities, and you know, you might love everything that's on offer, but you know, when you're talking about your own personal collection, you have to make choices, and you can't pursue every single line or every single item that perhaps, you know, catches your eye.
I don't know so much about your own collection. It's about your own finances. It's a lot easier when it's mum and dad's money to say, I want this, I want that. And now when you're in control of the dollars, you're like, reality sucks.
Yeah. That's true. But even then, I have to say, mum and dad would set limits. even back then.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I did very well. I don't want to sound like I'm being ungrateful, because I did extremely well.
Shout out to mum.
Your mum was tracking down every Masters figure for you.
Very close. And she was writing down names. Yeah, I'll tell you, just quickly digress from that. You know, I have the Filmation cartoon to thank for that. When mum first saw those Masters Universe toys, she was like, "You are not collecting them." They are horrible. They
she
are,
knew. She knew where it was going to end.
And you know what? My friend, her best friend's son, Shane, said, "Look, there's a He-Man cartoon, and I'll watch it." And mum's at the time, and it was that the first episode I saw mum and dad watched with me was A Friend in Need with Alina. And it was the drug episode.
Yep.
And mum's like, "Okay, you can get into this."
Drugs are bad.
Yeah.
You can have the toys.
So the moral... So the end of the Filmations weren't just for us, they were for the parents.
Yep. No, they did well to sell that. Star Wars now. 1/6 vintage animated Boba Fett is making an appearance in the Hot Toys line. So if you're up to Boba Fett version number 6, then you need to get this one. I think shout out to Jamie Peake. It did look very cool. I must admit I do like the colour scheme of that version of Boba Fett. That is, incidentally, his first on-screen appearance is in that the animated special. Yeah, the holiday special. So, and they had a really nice... They had some photo shoots done with him in sort of that very animated background from that special, which looked really cool. So keep an eye out for the animated special version of Boba Fett coming from Hot Toys.
And that animated segment is considered by many to be the best part of the holiday special.
It goes for about 2 minutes, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Sort of riding that big slug.
It's the only
redeeming part. Yeah.
The only watchable part. Yeah. We had a bit of news from Mattel. We got to see a bit of their new DC multiverse stuff. Darren, what did you see here?
I noticed a few things, actually, but the two things that really caught my eye was a Batman Gotham by Gaslight figure, which I thought looked really, really cool. As some people may be aware of, we're getting a DC animated Gotham by Gaslight movie coming out from Warner Brothers on the straight to Blu-ray DVD release schedule. So this looks like it may sort of fall in around that time. Very cool. I bought the graphic novel a number of years ago from Mark One Comics in Adelaide, which is now many, many years later become a comic shop again, ran by different people, called Greenlight. But I'm delighted to be seeing this happening. And Vixen was also another character.
Looked
I noticed.
Great, yeah.
Looked great.
Yeah.
It's been a while since Vixen's been in a Mattel line. So very impressed with
she's having a bit of a renaissance in general.
Yeah.
Like she's there was the animated series she had that was earlier this year or late last year, I think. It was only like a 12 episode run or something.
Yeah.
And the joke with that is that I think one of them she crossed over with Green Arrow, who was voiced by Stephen Amell from The Arrow Show. And then later on, Vixen actually showed up as part of the Legends of Tomorrow episode, and they crossed over. And so there was this thing of they just knew each other. And the line is, "Oh, you know, Green Arrow, how do you know her?" He goes, "Oh, let's just say we had an animated adventure previously."
That's great.
Love that.
Great writing.
That's a great line. That's very cool. To see her, really, really impressed with the way that, you know, they're chugging along with the multiverse line and it's doing so many different things.
Speaking of things that are cool and things that are animated, we had Batman 66 come into animation and we had sort of all the core rogues gallery coming back into that episode. So Joker, Riddler, Catwoman, etc. Obviously, Burt Ward and Adam West reprised their roles as Batman and Robin. There was a fair few. I think Julie Newmar was in that as well. We're getting, a sequel to that. And there was a panel on that one, which
is going to
feature Two-Face.
That's absolutely right. Batman vs. Two-Face is the sequel to Batman Return of the Caped Crusaders. It's been shown at New York Comic Con. And there was a panel with both Burt Ward and William Shatner, who William Shatner, for those who don't know, is voicing Harvey Dent and Two-Face in this. And just for that extra touch, Harvey Dent has been animated to look like William Shatner looked like in the 1960s. Oh, so if you think about if Two-Face had appeared in Batman 66 and was played by William Shatner, that's how he's been animated to
look. Harvey Dent is Captain Kirk. Oh, yes. What a crossover.
Sadly, as many people know, this is Adam West's final appearance playing Batman. So this film is dedicated in his memory, which is just terrific that they've done that. There are other Rogues Gallery characters that appear in this, and from what I can understand from the trailer, Dr. Harleen Quinzel shows up as well, and that. But also some really nice touches. Not only does Julie Newmar return in this, but so does Lee Merriweather, who people might be familiar with. Was Catwoman in the Batman 66 live-action movie. So she returns to the property as well.
Yeah. Very good. And for those that are fans of Batman the Animated Series...
Which is all of us.
Yeah, which is the whole world. it'll be getting a Blu-ray release, so high def.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Warner Brothers announced this at New York Comic Con. Funnily enough, they handed out free copies of the DVD.
Yep. Yep. These will be going on clearance soon.
Yeah, basically. They said this is the last...
Oh, you want one? Take two.
Yeah, basically. This is the last time, you know, you can expect to see this set. Slightly exaggerated, but that was the tone. You know, we're moving to something new. And they said in 2018, Batman the Animated Series will be entering... will be released on Blu-ray. Have not heard any details about how it'll be released, whether it'll be a complete series, random episodes, or whether it'll be divided into... volume sets like it's been, because it's been done on DVD in a multitude of different fashions.
Yeah, well, this will be my third version of the DVD.
I'm all in too. Yeah. How exciting is that?
It's very good.
On Blu-ray.
Oh, look, beautiful. Hey, this is some Frank posted this news on our Facebook page, and then I went sort of doing a bit of research, and this just went nuts.
Yep.
This is Funko, and what they're doing here is a line that they're calling the Disney Afternoon Action Figures. So I'm just going to walk through this, because this is outstanding. This is covering a lot of properties, some of which have had figures in the past, some of which have never had figures. So we've got Darkwing Duck and the 1-in-6 Chase figure, which is sort of the black and white version of Negaduck. We've got Baloo from Tailspin. Chip and Dale comes packed with Zipper the Housefly, and we've got an Uncle Scrooge from DuckTales. Look, that's a really exciting lineup, because you just sort of see, and then you hear people going, "Oh, what about Gadget? We need Gadget. What, you know, what about this figure? What about that figure?" So, a lot of excitement. I think there's a lot of excitement for Gizmo, who was actually going to appear. Yeah, there's a picture of Gizmo.
Gizmo Duck.
Gizmo Duck was actually scheduled to appear in the Darkwing Duck line. And we might talk about this in a future episode about cancelled lines.
Yeah.
But he wasn't going to, because there was no DuckTales line at the time.
No.
So he was going to cross over into the Darkwing Duck line. These are going to be around the 3¾-inch scale, give or take. And they're all going to be sort of scaled, I suspect. So Baloo's going to potentially be bigger. You know, Uncle Scrooge is sort of going to be the mid-size, and then Chip and Dale might be a bit smaller. They're not going to be, you know,
exact to scale
between, but sort of roughly at that scale. They look really, really nice.
Yeah, I'm just amazed that, like, I spent the rest of the afternoon when I saw that just humming all the theme songs, particularly the DuckTales one. And they look straight off the screen kind of thing. The other thing that I found really interesting, they all had different, totally different card art. You'd be forgiven for thinking they're not from the same series or maker even, but they look, you know, they've clearly, you know, paid a lot of detail to the original animation, and yeah, I can't wait.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of excitement for this line. And like I said, you know, if we go back in time, Playmates had the license to do a number of these lines in the past. We did get a line based on Tailspin. We got 8 figures. We did get a line based on Darkwing Duck. Again, 8 figures until that line got cancelled. To my knowledge, we never had a DuckTales line. I think the best we got with some of that stuff is sort of Happy Meals. McDonald's toys. I know definitely McDonald's did a Chip and Dale set of Happy Meals, I think, in the sort of little vehicles.
Yeah.
But no action figures. So this is pretty exciting. 3¾-inch. It's a just
touch
that,
small.
Yeah, it's a touch. Yeah. It's a touch small, but like you look at the Scrooge McDuck, and he had sort of the width of the animated character. Mm. So that might be the proportions right. So that might sort of redeem it somewhat in terms of the size.
I think the scale will work in its advantage in comparison to the price point. I think it'll be very affordable, and therefore they'll be able to mass produce more because more people would buy them. And let's face it, we're excited about a cartoon that doesn't really usually blip on our radars, for action figures, so to speak. I mean, it's something that even my wife was like, oh, you know, like I could see her mind ticking over, like, let's buy it.
Yeah, it's that little nostalgia thing. Yeah. It's reliving those Sunday morning cartoons in plastic form.
Aside from the superheroes and the, things.
Something a bit different, yeah.
Exactly. It ticks all the boxes because it's it hits the nostalgia button, but in a very unusual way. It's nostalgic, and yet it's never really been done in toy form, as you said. Mm. So it hits the nostalgia button, but also feels an unmet need of, you know, something that probably back in the day we all wished did have more of a toy action figure presence. So, fantastic that Funko gone and got this license and they're doing it.
And I'm drawing parallels here in terms of what Funko has done in the past. Funko's done that really nice, it's sort of fairly recent, but it's some really nice 3¾-inch Batman 66 figures.
Absolutely.
And they're not mainstream retail here in Australia. I'm not sure what it's like in other countries, but
they've been turning up at Toys R Us in the US.
Yeah, Toys R Us. It's a bit more mainstream. We're getting them here at a store called Zing, which is a bit more of a collector-centric type store, which is associated with EB Games here, which is one of our big video game franchises. They show up here for the $20 Australian price point, which is, it's getting up there, but it's certainly not in that $30, $35, $40 price range. So I'd be quite happy, I think, at that $20. If it hit Toys R Us, maybe you'd be talking $15 or something more to that effect. But a lot of excitement there. You go through the forums and people are just going nuts. people going, well, why are we getting not getting a Monty figure from with Zipper? Why are they packing in Zipper with Dale? And doing a bit of research, he's voiced by none other than Peter Cullen. So there you go. Something I'm very excited about is a few figures that NECA are doing, and this is in the new Blade Runner franchise. So Blade Runner 2049. When Harrison Ford was asked, are you going to reboot every successful franchise you've ever done? He responded, you bet your ass I am. And here he is reprising his very iconic role as Deckard. We're getting, finally, a Deckard figure from this movie. We're also getting Officer K, who's played by Ryan Gosling, and just announced we're getting the characters of Wallace and Love in the two figures for the second series. Wallace is played by none other than Jared Leto, so doesn't really look like the Joker in this version, although his eyes are kind of scary.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, very excited to get those figures. Another piece of very exciting news, we did a sort of retrospective episode where we talked about Jurassic Park and looked a little bit at what sort of the new licensing was happening with the Jurassic World franchise and that moving sort of from Hasbro over to Mattel. When it had sat with Hasbro or Kenner for a long period of time, I guess since 1993 when the property commenced. So that's nothing new there in terms of that sort of major license moving to Mattel, but exciting news that there's some other toy companies getting involved. I was hoping within my heart of heart that Lego would come back and give us some more figures for the rebooted franchise. Mm. They've signed on, so they're on board. Nice. So we did get some Jurassic World Lego sets. They just came and went and sold like that. We do know that Mattel are going back and doing Jurassic Park stuff. So this is Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah,
this is 1993, old school. I'm just hoping, come on, Jurassic Park Lego sets. Oh. I just want, what I want is, like, you know, those iconic vehicles. So you've got the four-wheel drive, you've got the Jeep, and you've got sort of the four-wheel drive Explorer that the kids are in and it gets attacked. I just want that vehicle being chased by a giant T-Rex with an injured Ian Malcolm in the back, sort of with the rearview mirror.
Just take off one of his legs.
Yeah.
Seems like a no-brainer that that's the direction they'd take.
You think so, yeah. Yeah, so they're very excited about that. We're going to get into some trailer news. We've got some freaking exciting trailer news here. Final Justice League trailer dropped. Thoughts? We'll go around the room. My thoughts first up was I think we need more Mercedes product placement in this film. There just wasn't enough, in my opinion. There's not going to be enough. But look, in all seriousness, some amazing cars that are going to be featured in this. What I heard was Ben Affleck basically was playing Gran Turismo on PlayStation, and within it there was a concept car, not made in any physical form, just designed for the game. And he's like, "That's Bruce Wayne's car." So they got this team from Mercedes to basically bring this
make a car for
us. Make a car for us. And they brought that design to life, but they made it 10% bigger so that 6'4" Ben Affleck could sit inside it.
Geez.
But then obviously in the game the interior wasn't designed, so they designed this full interior. And that just looks, you know, if we think the Batmobile is cool, just wait until you see this car. It is insane. But thoughts on the trailer going around the room?
I thought it was good. I'm trying not to blow my expectations out of the water. I'm trying to, you know, step back a little and just wait for the movie, because I certainly don't want to be disappointed. I personally can't help but feel, and I know this is going maybe against the grain a little bit in this room, the podcasters, but I just can't help but feel DC have jumped the gun a little bit in throwing all their eggs in one basket with the Justice League. I would much prefer a few more solo films with Superman, Batman, Flash, Aquaman, all that. I just don't want it to be. It cannot be a bad movie. It just cannot be.
I can't afford it to be. Yeah.
If it doesn't smash the box office, if it doesn't get amazing ratings, not by just by fans but by critics as well, I really don't want to be part of that world after the movie.
I don't want to live on this planet anymore.
Because don't get me wrong,
it's called apocalypse. Yeah.
I'm a massive fan of the DC universe, and I need this movie to be fantastic. So I'm trying to not build my expectations too high. On a positive note, I think Aquaman's going to be a little bit more funny and sarcastic than I initially thought of him, during the earlier trailers, where he was all, you know, the teaser of him just standing there all buff and serious and things. Seeing him, he's a bit more witty and things like that. So I thought that was a good step in the right direction.
The litmus test is really, I don't care about any critics' reactions except for Chris Wisdom's. That's going to be, if he gives it the thumbs up,
that's right,
then we know
that's all
we've
won. Need.
Yeah.
That's all we need to know. Yeah, look, my initial takeaway from the trailer was, it was a bit like Ben, where I just go, you know, I don't want to see too much. I found that...
Turn away!
Exactly. And I think it was... I'm trying to think of the movie. If it was a Marvel or a DC one, but there has been... Deadpool is probably a good example, because a lot of the stuff they showed were those laugh out loud one liners to hook you in the trailer, and then that scene comes up in the movie and you're like, yeah, I've seen that bit. Like, you don't get that reaction in the cinema, and I was kind of worried that Justice League was doing the same sort of thing. But my initial reaction there, of course, was the whole thing where Joss Whedon has sort of taken over the reins from Zack Snyder, and that very first scene where this shouldn't really be a spoiler at this point, but Superman's standing in the field and Lois is there, and you know, that it actually reminded me of a scene, and Darren can probably correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe there's a scene in the original Superman movie where, like, talking with Martha.
Yes.
Yeah, sorry, Chris. In a field kind of thing, and it's bright daylight. Like, I think I've seen a screen cap putting the two side by side. But that part, very emotional, very drawn out, very bright, very colourful. And I just went, that's Joss Whedon. And then from that point, you get the basically them battling the parademons and the big, the music builds, and it's smash and bash and crash and all that sort of stuff. And that very much looked like Zack Snyder's, vision. Sort of matching with the other stuff he's done. I agree, Ben. Aquaman, he just seems like a fun dude. You know, he's just like, I'm a bloke's bloke. You look a bit funny dressed up like a bat. Let's go smash some stuff, you know? Like, I'm a little worried about Flash. I just think he's going to come off as that bit too sarcastic, a bit too, like, I have to make fun of everything and talk really fast like this, you know? And I'm like, Barry Allen has always had that wit about him, but they're playing him in this, you know, is he on the spectrum type thing? And I just go, yeah, is that the right way to do it kind of thing? I'm not sure.
And that's sort of where I allude to, you sort of needed a warm-up movie to introduce Correct. Him and the audience to acknowledge, oh, that's who he is as a character,
yep.
for him then to be in a larger group
a team movie.
Scenario
yeah.
and be like, oh, yeah, that's just him. But now we're meeting him for pretty much the first time
yep.
and we've got to take him at face value. And I'm the bit the same. You know, is he going to be that annoying character?
Or yeah.
Will he win our hearts over?
Yeah.
I can't emphasize enough. This has to be fantastic.
Yeah. I think for what it's worth, I think Cyborg looked really good. There were some complaints in some of the earlier trailers that yep. he looked a bit too Transformer-y, and in a very dark and gritty setting, he was just bright and shiny and not a scratch on his paintwork at all. I thought he looked good for the bits that we saw. I think, you know, Wonder Woman, Batman, and even the little bit we saw of Superman, I got no issues with them. It's these additional characters that are sort of going to make or break it. But, yeah, very keen. I haven't quite planned to take the day off of work like some other people in the room, Darren.
I'm taking a week off.
But, yeah, I think my wife just the other day was looking to book in, you know, gold class tickets and nice. Yeah, arrange to see it.
Nice wife.
Yeah, look, I'm keen. I'm not going to make any secret of this. I've been waiting for a Justice League film since 1989, since I saw Tim Burton's Batman film in the cinema.
Mom, are we getting a Justice League film this year? No, Darren.
Mom. It's pretty much. I'll tell you in another podcast where all that comes from. But, you know, for me, they're intrinsically linked.
Yeah.
But, look... I've wanted this. It's, to me, it's a natural progression. I'm not as tempered with my excitement as others in the room. I am excited. For me, just the fact that they're making a Justice League film is sensational and long overdue in my mind. I get what people are saying about solo films for some of these other characters. Like, I get the impression that there's a sense that some of these characters in Warner Brothers' minds are not quite as... perhaps not quite as iconic as some of the others. So they thought they'd try them in an ensemble first and then see who gets a spin-off.
Yeah.
So characters like Cyborg, if they're hugely popular, and I've heard some people that have seen advanced screenings think that he could be, for people with disabilities, what Wonder Woman's been for women in okay. superheroes. So,
that's fair.
That's a cool call.
That's good
so,
call, yeah.
So... it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. Mm-hmm. But some of these could be supporting characters and some of these could become A-listers with their own franchise films.
Yeah.
So I can see the merits in both approaches, what Marvel's done with individual stories leading up to this, and I can see what others done. The idea of doing a number of solo Batman films, I can see that Warner Brothers are probably thinking his character's iconic enough through other incarnations that they can get away with it. And Batman vs. Superman was half his film anyway.
Yep.
Yeah, well, there was that news that came out in the last few weeks about where they've said they're looking to do not every DC film that comes out from this point forward is part of the shared universe. They're looking to do a solo Joker film and that. So they're doing something different. And I don't mind that because there's now this bit of an expectation that, oh, it's a Marvel film, so it has to be linked to this, this, and this. And DC have gone... yeah, we sort of tried that and it's worked with varying degrees of success depending on the movie, but they haven't gone, do you know what? We're just going to do our own thing. And you speak to a lot of DC people and some of their favourite stuff are the Elseworld tales, you know, that are just these one shots. Here's something you know and we're going to flip it on its head. Gotham by Gaslight, for example, you know, and I'm looking forward to seeing just some far out stuff like that.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think Frank's hitting it on the head. You run the risk if you go down... everything is connected, and I think there should be a shared universe, don't get me wrong, but you run the risk of it seeming like, you know, well, on next week's episode, this one's about Flash, and on next week's episode it's about you know, and it becomes very episodic.
Yeah,
these feature films, you know, they should seem more than that.
Yeah,
yep.
Exactly.
And, you know, I love the idea of, you know, that we're hearing about this potential Joker
spin off, solo film,
set outside of the DC multiverse and
Scorsese.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm thinking something like Heat, you know.
DiCaprio's in the running for it? I don't think
it's been confirmed. Speculation,
that. Nothing's been confirmed, but yeah, can you imagine it?
Yeah, that'd be very cool.
Crazy.
Keeping on the theme of trailers, the final Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi trailer has dropped. So I know there's sort of been a bit of, you know, warning that if you don't want any spoilers, don't watch the last trailer. So if you want to drop out now. It features a very angry, very moody Kylo Ren, a worried-looking Leia, Snoke doing his very, very best Emperor impersonation, Rey just wanting to know how she fits into everything, a very sort of concerned-looking Luke thinking about raw power and where he's seen raw power and how that's gone bad in the past, and a Porg trying to roar like Chewie. Porgs, it's all been, this week for me has all just been about Porg memes. I've just been forwarding and looking at Porg memes. I've seen the chest burster Porg. I've seen the Borg with the Porg on Patrick Stewart's shoulder.
I
wanted to do a Beyond Porg, playing tennis, but what are our thoughts on that one, the trailer, and two, this cute Porg thing?
I think the best one I've seen is where he's like, it's like he's trapped in Donald Trump's hair trying to get out. Just going, no. That stuff has been everywhere. Look, I think that one of the things that Force Awakens did really well is the trailers didn't tell you the whole story. There's lots of question marks, but there was just enough for you to go, oh, you got me curious. All right, I'll go buy a ticket. And they've done it again with these trailers. I think they haven't revealed a whole lot. It's less is more, which I think is a bit of a lost art when it comes to trailers.
Yeah.
I think it also has some clever editing in it, because there's a bit right at the end where it's made to look like Rey is joining the dark side. In essence, she's saying, I want to know where I fit into this, and that cuts to Kylo Ren, and then hold a hand outstretched, and the implication is that, you know, she takes his hand and then, oh no, like that's the last big reveal at the end, and she's joining the dark side, and you just go, yeah. Or it could be that the editors are really clever, like there could be way much more to that scene. Yeah. So I'm pretty excited for it. I think at the time when it dropped, I was out at lunch at work and I was watching it on the phone. I've walked back to the office and then I was about to say to my boss, Have you watched it? And he's already on his phone watching it.
He's already generating some Porg memes. For me, the biggest question was, who is the Porg's father? I mean, You're Porg in that? No. This is all Porgs for me. Hey, if we had any doubts before...
You want the Porgs to have the next solo film, don't you?
Porg Awakens.
After the Han Solo,
the Porg Hatch.
One show, you want the Porg film. Or are you hoping for a whole trilogy?
No, I want David Attenborough narrating the Porg film.
Episode 10, Attack of the Porgs.
And then you have the Porg in their natural habitat, silently walking along with the Chewbacca.
Snoke looked pretty tough in this.
He looked absolutely menacing.
I heard what they've done for Snoke is that he was CGI. So we had Andy Serkis playing, you know, motion cap actor we've got. But this version of Snoke is a puppet, essentially, is what I've heard. So it's sort of a puppeteer face. And I thought he looked absolutely brilliant, the close-up of the face.
Yeah.
I've seen someone that split the face in two and flipped it, and it's almost like he's got a good half and a deformed half when you actually do that. Check that out. That's pretty cool.
I think I know. Yeah.
But he looked really powerful. He had sort of... Rey was kind of bent over.
And he was in
pain, and he was in the background. So very Force-sensitive, obviously, which I guess we all
kind
of 99% certain of, but that's been confirmed by that. And it seems like the First Order, they're angry, like in Empire. Mm. You know, this is it. We're coming at you now. The resistance.
Yep. You've got our attention.
Yeah, yeah. We're gonna wipe you out and destroy you. So maybe it's got that same sort of parallel that we had with Empire, and maybe they're going to do something like say and just flip it on its head and do something that we're not expecting.
I'm hoping for that, because I think it's always nice to have surprises. And just on the Lord of Snoke, one of the things I thought Force Awakens did brilliantly was the CGI for Snoke. It kept him very cloak and dagger, and you didn't see too much. He looked huge, and you wondered whether or not he really was that huge, or whether or not that being a hologram, how much of that was embellished. I love the fact that we've had to wait until the second of the new trilogy to actually see him for real. I think they've done brilliantly, and we saw just enough of him the trailer to want to see more and for him to look cool, but not too much that we feel it's been spoiled.
Yeah, very good. Final reminder, the second Masters poll is up. So if you go onto the He-Man.org, there is a poll. They've been doing these polls where basically you seem to scroll through about a billion characters and you pick the ones that you like. Poll one has closed, but poll two is live. So if you want to contribute to what may eventuate as one of our next characters, jump online, He-Man.org, and have a go at the poll.
And just on that note, sorry to interrupt, He-Man.org has put the Super 7 what fans want to know questions online as of today. So they're offering a chance for fans to ask Super 7 any questions they might have regarding the Classics Information Lines.
Yeah, very good. We're just going to do a very quick 2-minute pitch episode. Do we have any fancy opening or not?
We're
just
going to try this one.
Extra, read all about it. It's the 2-minute pitch.
What an intro.
Yeah.
All right. So tonight I'm going to do Golden Girls by Galoob. All right. I might upset some people in the room with this, with some of my comments on this line, but let's see how we go. All right. First up, easily one of the best and well-made action figure lines of the 1980s to hit the toy stores without the aid of an in-production cartoon series. To boost sales, Golden Girl and the Guardians of the Gemstones by Galoob was, in reality, a step up in quality to that of Mattel's She-Ra line.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yet, it failed miserably in comparison of sales. With both lines aimed at young female market, Golden Girl and She-Ra were created to counteract and dominate the girl Barbie line and offer girls a chance to play with their brothers when He-Man and Grayskull Castle were brought out to play. Both featured strong blonde caped women in charge, a bevy of sidekicks, and a desire to kick some evil butt. But when comparing the two lines... when comparing the two lines, especially in this day and age, Golden Girl easily beats out Princess of Power. And the reason I added that sentence in is because if you guys didn't know what She-Ra was and you didn't know what Golden Girls was, and I presented you with the two lead characters, I'd argue this, that you'd be like, well, she's a bit too Barbie-ish and put She-Ra down, and you'd be like, I'm going with this warrior princess girl who's got tattoos and a larger sword, and they just look more dominating and more barbaric than She-Ra, in my opinion. Right. So Golden Girl tells the tale of the Golden Girl and her gemstone guardians, whose main aim was to protect the citizens of Aragonia from the evil Dragon Queen. Each Golden Girl figure came displayed in a window box with stunning artwork, a reversible cape, an awesome and heavy die-cast metal shield, and a weapon with belt, headdress, piece, and of course a comb, so you can reset Golden Girl's do after a nasty battle in the sandpit. In all, there are 11 figures released in the line. Golden Girl and her cohort of do-gooders, including Jade, Onyx, which was a male character, Ruby, Sapphire, and Prince Korma, while Dragon Queen brought along Moth Lady, Orga, the male character, Valtara, and Wild One. The figures themselves were taller than She-Ra, with more proportionate and actually seem more in place aesthetically with the He-Man than his sister ever did. The paint apps on each figure were very impressive for the market, especially that of Dragon Queen and Valtara, who both featured an impressively evil face paint and made the line feel a bit more edgier. One other shout out is to Wild One, whom has tribal tattoos all over her face and legs. Even with the addition of a castle playset, two horses, a chariot, colouring in boots, board game, and three series of fashions, Galoob and the Golden Girl lost in the battle of the female heroines, and the line was sadly only lasted on retail shelves no more than 1 year.
Mm.
What seemed to be one of the Galoob and Golden Girl's biggest problem was the lack of direction in target market when in the 80s, boys played with He-Man and girls played with Barbies, and there was no grey area. While it was clear she, with all her pinkness and femininity, was aimed at girls, Golden Girl look was, and noted above, edgier and somewhat more masculine and alienated the female market. While the figure's rooted hair and toy combs was passed on by the boys, you'll remember while He-Man's characters, Teela and Evil Lyn, were given figures both featured plastic screenings and moulded hair.
Hmm.
Both of the lines cancelled, there was talk of a second series of figures which included some amazing designs and playset concepts. The figures, which were sold for a few bucks in the 80s, can now fetch up to $50 for a carded figure, more for the horse and chariot, and even more for a blocks playset. As far as value for loose figures, you're probably looking at around the $20 mark for one complete. Obviously a lot cheaper for just the doll, however these figures come with the several accessories, so hunting down individual parts may blow the price out. For a line that was somewhat confusing as to what gender it was aimed for, and only lasted 1 year, 1984 to 1985, it has now found itself a market with adult collectors, including myself, whom appreciate the grittier design of these vintage action figures. At this point in time, I personally have 6 of the Golden Girls in my collection. I'm aiming to hopefully hunt down all 9 of the girls, but I'm going to pass on the males. I personally have no interest in either the horses or the playset unless I miraculously find them locally at a decent price.
Mm. I remember the first time we were at a toy fair and Darren said, oh, look, it's a Golden Girls figure. And I thought, why are you interested in Betty White?
I was just thinking that. Like, Estelle Getty with tattoos? Yeah, like,
this is weird.
It was me after that. I don't know why you think it was.
Doing a little bit of research for this, you got to cipher so much through so much.
Google searches.
Because it just comes up with the TV show, yeah.
But I can remember this line as a child, and I can remember in the schoolyard, two lines of thought. There were kids, particularly boys, who thought they were Shira figures.
Yeah.
Mm. And there were other boys who were like, these are what the Shira figures should have been.
Mm.
So even then, there was that sense that this was something closer.
Yep.
Yeah, right.
I think, while Ben might be right about it not lasting that long, it's worth also pointing out that Princess of Power didn't have the long run that Master of Universe did. Yeah. Neither of them were quite the raging successes that I think they could have been. In Golden Girls' case, you're right, I think branding and not having a card in tie-in ultimately hurt it. Princess of Power, well, it was not quite sure who it was pitching to, perhaps. It was very doll-like, trying to win the girls over, but they were trying to win over the girls that had bought Teela and Evil Lyn, who were perhaps buying action figures anyway. And that the cut and thrust of what I guess I'm saying is that they were probably both ahead of their time, and with different execution, they both probably could have been, you know, lasted a lot longer than they did.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say clearly the cartoon or lack of would have hurt it where Shearer would have powered on through that. But I think it's a great analysis that you've done, Ben, because I think that is very true, and this is the case of sometimes the bigger property that's in the public eye just gets the shelf space.
The dominating.
Yeah, it's the one that's got the brand recognition.
And Shearer would have, as you're right, as you said, Trent, would have had the double factor, I think, going in its favour of a cartoon tie-in, but also being a spin-off from the most successful action male boys line at that time.
Yeah.
So it would have been a no-brainer for retailers to say, give us Princess of Power.
Mm.
And that, as opposed to Golden Girls, which, didn't have the brand recognition. And even now gets, you know, as you said, you have to sift through it because of a later television series with the same name that bears no relation to it whatsoever.
Mm. Very good.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much for tuning in to this episode of Toy Power. Great to have your company. As always, if there's any feedback, shout out, hit us up in Facebook or Instagram. Thanks very much, guys, for your company and analysis today, and we'll see you around the toy aisles.
Thank you one and all, and good journey until next time.
You can find the Toy Power team at all the usual online places. Facebook.com/Toy Power Podcast, at Toy Power Podcast on both Twitter and Instagram, or have your say and email us, toypowerpodcast@gmail.com. Subscribe to the show on both iTunes and Stitcher, and please leave us a review. Otherwise, we just assume we're awesome.
We are a proud member of the Giant Size Team Up Network. Check out all the awesome shows on this awesome network full of okay people. Want to learn more? Go to GiantSizeTeamUp.com, where you can find us and a whole lot more awesome shows. Well, they're not more awesome than us, but...